Welcome to the Emotional Eating Breakthrough Program. You're in the right place. I'm Mark David, founder of the Institute for the Psychology of Eating, best-selling author, and originator of the fields of dynamic eating psychology and mind-body nutrition. I so appreciate you putting your time, your energy, and money into your own betterment and your own personal transformation. I truly believe that the best investment you can make is in yourself. So the principles and strategies you'll be learning in this program are the same ones that I've been using with great success over the last four decades with many thousands of students and clients. It's how I train our coaches and health professionals to work with their clients when it comes to emotional eating. So now that we're on this journey together, I suggest that you put yourself 100% into this experience, meaning make the commitment to get the most out of what this program has to offer, which is a lot. This is a 10-week transformational program. So practically each week, you'll have access to that week's video, the audio version of that video, transcripts, and notes for your homework and practices. As you can imagine, the homework I'll be suggesting, meaning exercises, journaling, and practices, these are the key to your success. Insight and wisdom sets the table for success, but your breakthroughs will come through your effort and your practice. So I'll do my absolute best to inspire you along this journey together. That's one of my jobs as your coach and guide. The purpose of this program is to help you have a significant breakthrough when it comes to emotional eating. The purpose is to help you find the freedom and peace with food that you know deep inside is your birthright. This program is going to give you the tools you need to become empowered in your relationship with food and body like never before. When we have a breakthrough with emotional eating, our life changes in a big and beautiful way. You will have more confidence, you'll feel more empowered, you'll be happier, and you can devote your energy to where it truly belongs, which is simply this, living your best life. If there's anything I say at any point that doesn't work for you, please simply discard it and let it go. Even though I'm a teacher and coach by profession, I'm also a student, a lifelong learner, and for me, being the best student I can be means I take the best out of what any teacher or any experience is offering me and gently let go of anything that gets in the way of what I ultimately want, which is wisdom, healing, transformation, and being the best person I can be. Allow me to suggest that when you're listening to each week's session, you create a quiet and relaxed space. You assure that your time is uninterrupted and you make it your special and sacred time to do good work on self. My friends, this is your time. It's your time to heal, to transform, to create the free and happy relationship with food and body that you deserve. Again, that's your birthright. You're not born into this world for the purpose of being in suffering around food or your body. Your relationship with food is not here to torture you, but to teach you. Trust the wisdom of life, trust your journey, and know that you have a greater destiny to live. Be patient with yourself and with this program. I promise you that if you put in the time, the effort, the work, the heart, and the self-nourishment, you will reap a great reward. This first week's session is called Your Journey with Food and Body. So it's all about the foundational concepts of eating psychology, some core concepts around how to think about food and nutrition, and some of the key features of our relationship with food. So we'll be creating a foundation in this first session. Now, just let me mention briefly, our other sessions will include week number 2, what is emotional eating? Week number 3, the science and psychology of emotional eating. Week number 4, reframing emotional eating. Week number 5, toxic dietary beliefs. Week number 6 is harnessing the wisdom and power of your life stage. Week number 7 is nutritional influences on emotional eating. Week number 8, emotional eating and weight. Week number 9 is skillfully working with emotional eating. And our last session, week number 10, your new relationship with food and life. Okay, my friends, let's dive into today's material. By now, you've heard me say the term relationship with food several times. I think this is a very important distinction. It's a very important term. So let's take a moment and visit it. We are certainly in a relationship with food. Let's break that down by defining the term relationship. We can do this by thinking about all the words that might describe, let's say, your relationship with another human being that you're close with. So, some words that can describe our relationship with a significant other include love, hate, pleasure, pain, intimacy, closeness, dependency, hopes, desires, communication, fulfillment, conflict, uncertainty, expectations, disappointment, commitment, power struggles, steadiness, change, confusion, healing, transformation, so much more. What I'd like to suggest is that every single word that can possibly describe your relationship with another human being equally describes your relationship with food. Think about that. Your relationship with food, by the way, is arguably the longest-term relationship you will ever have. From the moment you're born till the moment you die, you're in a relationship with food. And again, that relationship has love, pleasure, pain, uncertainty, change, and so much more. When we think in food in terms of our relationship with it, we're acknowledging the importance of food and our connection to it. We're highlighting the dynamic flow that we have with food. As human beings, think about it, we're defined by our relationships. If you look at all of your most important relationships with people, you can see that those relationships make us who we are. The same holds true of our relationship with food. It helps define who you are, and it helps define your experience of life. But, you know, perhaps one of the key characteristics of our most important relationships, and for sure our relationship with food, is the phenomenon of change. Our relationship with food is naturally ever-changing. Think of all the many different diets you've had throughout your life. We all start out with food coming through a cord in our belly when we're in the womb. Then we shift to mother's milk when we're born. Then we transition to simple mushy food. And then your parents feed you more complex food. And you've likely experimented with a number of different diets throughout your adult years. You read different books. You try various new foods. Your diet might change when you get married or you live with a significant other. Your way of eating can be affected by your job, by parenting, by finances, by your changing nutritional beliefs. And all the while, as the way that you eat changes, the body changes, right? You've literally lived in so many different bodies within this one life you've been living. The body you had as a child differs greatly from when you went through puberty, which differs from the body you had as a teen, which differs from the bodies we inhabit in our 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and more. Your body changes with exercise. It changes when you pay attention to it more. It changes when you go on a weight loss diet. It changes when we're ill, when you go through pregnancy, through menopause, so much more. The point here, my friends, is being in a body is an ever-changing affair. Our job is to more and more relax into the changing nature of the body and by extension, the changing nature of life. So expect change, notice change, embrace change. Notice the places where you might fight change. Learn to accept change as a fundamental part of human existence here on planet Earth. You can't predict the future, but you can always predict that things will change. Another important context in our work together, and when it comes to having a real breakthrough with emotional eating, is to think of your life as a story. Your life is a story. And stories are, they're beautiful. They're magical, they're epic, they're enchanting. Stories can also have moments and times that are sad and dramatic and dark. you know, think back to when you were a child and how much you loved hearing stories, how much you loved reading stories. Every movie or TV show you've ever watched is a story. The poet Muriel Rukeyser once said that the universe is made of stories, not of atoms. I love that. The universe is made of stories, not of atoms. Meaning when you die, people don't remember and talk about your molecules. They tell stories about you. They share special memories about you. The people close to you, who they have died, they live inside you as memories, as stories. Who we are is a lifelong collection of stories. Who we are is one long epic story, a feature-length movie, and it's your movie. Another word that we can use interchangeably with story is journey. Your life is a journey. Hence, your relationship with food and body is a journey. And your challenges with emotional eating is a journey. And what are some of the elements of a classic journey? In the typical hero's journey, for example, some of the elements of that hero's journey include, first and foremost, the ordinary world or our status quo. That's where the hero's journey starts. It starts at a status quo, ordinary life. Then there's a call to adventure. Then there are tests. There are allies. There are enemies. There are challenges and ordeals. There might be endings and loss. There are magical moments. And there's a time of resurrection and transformation. By the way, I've just described to you the fundamental elements of so many movies you've ever seen or watched, books you've read, or shows that you've tuned into. So I'd like to see you start to see your life as a journey and your relationship with food and body as a journey. It's unfolding. It's ever changing. It's magic, and it's challenging you to grow. It's challenging you to dig deeper. It's challenging you to be the hero or the heroine of your own life. So yes, we know that a challenge like emotional eating can be hard. It can seem like we're trapped or stuck or cursed or alone or destined for more pain and misfortune. But I promise you that every good story, your story, has redemption. Every good story has a sense of adventure. And one way to bring a sense of adventure into your journey with food and body, your journey with emotional eating, is for you to bring forth your curiosity. So throughout this program, I will consistently ask you to be curious, be interested in your life and your emotional eating. Curiosity means that you're interested and fascinated with your own story. It asks us to see life through fresh eyes. By the way, curiosity is a cure. It's a cure for stuckness. It's a cure for hopelessness. Curiosity sort of asks us to be a child again, to see the magic in the world around you and in your own life. Because if you're stuck in emotional eating, there ain't no magic there. And it's our job to invoke it slowly. And the challenge is, you know, certain aspects of our human journey feel troubled to us. And perhaps one of the most troubling parts of being human is uncertainty. So to be human is to be inherently uncertain about so many things. We don't know with any certainty, how's my health going to be? Will I get ill? Will I recover? When will I die? Will I have money, security? Am I going to have love? Will I have friendships that support me? Will I be taken care of? Will my children and loved ones be okay? Will my eating challenges go away? Will I lose weight? And when? And how much? Will I have a happy ending to my life journey? That's a lot of uncertainty. And what often happens is that we humans, we feel very uncomfortable about these uncertainties. Why? We'd much prefer certainty, to be able to know how everything is going to turn out. So in the face of a life that's naturally filled with uncertainty, we will respond to that uncertainty with attempts to control. We can be very controlling people. We might try to control our health. We try to control our finances. We might try to control other people. We might try to control our partner, our children. And guess what? We will often use food and diet to enact a sort of symbolic control over our life. I want to say that again because I think it's important. We'll often use food to try to enact symbolic control over our life, meaning, heck, if I can't control my fate, my destiny, my happiness, then surely I can control what I eat. And we believe that if we can control exactly what we eat, then somehow you win. I'm victorious. I'm the victor rather than the victim. So what do? We try to have the perfect diet. We try to eat a specific and small amount of food. We try to control our appetite and impulses. And we unknowingly substitute the control of food and appetite for the control or for just having true power and love and peace in our life. In a strange way, we are unknowingly trying to overrule our own biology, our own inherent true nature. So the reality is we are born and designed to be eaters. No matter what you believe about food, diet, nutrition, and weight, every human being and every creature on earth is here to be an eater. We cannot fight that or overcome that no matter how hard we try. Now, one of the keys to transforming emotional eating is to embrace the beautiful fact that as part of being human, you're an eater. You need food. You require it. We are designed physiologically to love food, to feel pleasure from food. The wisdom of the universe has created us such that that which is essential for life is pleasurable to us. Eating allows us to survive. So naturally, it feels good to eat, and it feels good to survive and live another day. Many people are subtly and unconsciously fighting their biological design and fighting the fact that we're here to be eaters and that eating is inherently good. Part of what you're going to be learning in this program is how to more deeply embrace the beauty of your birthright as an eater. You know, one of the ways that we get confused around eating is that we really don't know with absolute certainty exactly what we should eat to be healthy, vibrant, and be a well-nourished human being. We don't know what to eat to lose the exact amount of weight. We don't know what to eat to get all the things that we say we want from food, pleasure, long life, vitality, energy, perfect weight, all the goodies. So the question of what should I eat is a very important question. And it's a vulnerable kind of question because there's so many different diets out there and so many different nutritional systems. You and I can spend from now until forever studying free dietary and nutritional information online. What's more, you've likely noticed that there are an endless amount of nutritional approaches that are seemingly well-regarded. They have experts and doctors that back up that specific way of eating. And these nutritional systems are even backed by scientific research that seem to confirm the superior health benefits of that system. But oddly enough, so many of those systems nutritionally contradict one another. So in other words, there's a fantastic amount of research, by the way, on the benefits of eating vegan or vegetarian. There's also research that confirms the benefits of eating a paleo diet. That is a diet that includes a good amount of meat. For every expert, for every PhD, you will find an equal and opposite PhD. And the net result of all this is that so many people are confused about what to eat. We are like nutritional refugees, and so many people are suffering from what I call a high-fact diet, meaning we're overloaded with far too much conflicting nutritional information that's put forth by the experts, and that's just cluttering our minds, and we don't know what to do. So, allow me to help you clear up any and all nutritional confusion from now until forever. Here we go. First, the field of nutrition itself is uncertain. It's a new, young science. The field of nutrition is still growing, it's still developing, and it is not, simply not, a unified field. There's no ultimate wise committee of men and women with long gray hair and white coats who are all nodding their heads in agreement about what everybody everywhere should eat. So what I would like to suggest to you is that there is no one single perfect nutritional approach. There is no perfect diet. Rather, there's a spectrum of nutrition, meaning there are as many correct, appropriate, and useful diets to follow as there are people on planet Earth. And the ideal diet for each one of us, for you, is influenced by what? It's influenced by our age, our level of health, our genetics, our sex, our lifestyle practices, the level and type of exercise we do, the climate we're in, our geographic location, our culture, our personal preferences, our health goals and desires. And the ideal diet for each one of us, as we've seen, changes during the course of our life. Remember, being in the womb, being an infant, your diet shifts to adjust to the changing body and the changing nature of life. So, my friends, if you're looking for the one true perfect diet that you and everyone else can follow for the rest of eternity and never have to think about it again, and everything is just going to be perfect because I found the perfect diet, I'm going to just say to you, please let that go right now. Let go of the tyranny of having to find the perfect diet, whatever you think that is. Let go of the tyranny, by the way, of having the perfect body or the perfect anything. The question of what should I eat, it's dynamic, it's moving, it's an ever-changing target. We're still growing and evolving as a human species. The way planet Earth eats has changed throughout the millennia, and it keeps changing as we experiment with new foods, new diets, new ingredients, new ways of eating. So in a sense, we're all participating in a beautiful, lifelong nutritional experiment, whether we know it or not or like it or not. So your task is to embrace the uncertainty of what to eat, to be curious, to try different nutritional approaches, to learn, to seek advice and opinions, to be open, but to not give away your power to any expert or authority. So I would love for you to think of yourself as a nutritional explorer. What a wonderful way to be, just to be an explorer. Now, if you're confused about all the different and oftentimes conflicting nutrition information that you've learned, try using this simple tool. Take the nugget of wisdom you learn from any expert or book. Take the nugget of wisdom from it. Meaning, no matter what expert you listen to, no matter what book you read, there's almost always something useful in what any of these books or experts have to say. For example, if you've been a lifelong heavy meat eater, maybe more veggies or being vegetarian or vegan for some amount of time can be useful to you, and has been for a lot of people. If you've been a long-term vegetarian and you're not feeling healthy and vibrant, maybe experiment with a paleo diet and eat some high-quality meat. See what rings true for you in anything that you learn, and just consider experimenting with it. These nutritional distinctions I've just mentioned can be fantastically empowering and help set you on a path that's more balanced and practical and empowering for you and your health. You know, so many people who emotionally eat think they're the only ones doing it. We can believe that we're alone, that somehow life has singled us out to be the one person afflicted with emotional eating. If you have such thoughts, please remember this. You personally did not invent emotional eating. Yes, emotional eating is a very personal experience, but it's actually a collective challenge, meaning so many people emotionally eat, so many people are dealing with it, and much more so, by the way, than you might imagine. So the world conditions us when it comes to how we think and feel about food and think about our body. The world conditions us to how we think about food and body. And philosophers, anthropologists, some of the greatest thinkers have pointed out that if you want to learn about a culture or a group of people, look at their creation story. Look at their story of how the world began. So we're going to take a moment and look at a popular creation story, story of Adam and Eve. Notice some of the elements of that story. Just going to break it down. The creator of all that is has essentially one rule, and oddly, it's a food rule. Don't eat the apple. So the apple, in a strange way, is the original bad food. Interesting, though, how these days the greatest computer company on earth is called Apple Computer. one of the greatest cities on earth that I was born in, New York City, is called the Big Apple. And we often say an apple a day keeps the doctor away. So clearly this has been the greatest comeback of any fruit in all of history. Okay, anyway, after the first couple gets that first rule, and it's a food rule, what happens? They promptly break that rule. They eat the apple. Then what happens? All of a sudden they're hiding in the garden. They're covering up their nakedness and they're feeling ashamed and afraid. And then on top of that, they're soon punished, i.e., they're thrown out of the bliss of the garden and they enter a cruel world. So let's look at some of the elements of the story because I think this should sound familiar to some of us. Think of your own life. You have a food rule. You break that food rule. What happens when you break your own food rule? You feel ashamed about your body. Too fat, not good enough, etc. And then we punish ourselves for eating the food on our bad list. And how do you punish yourselves? Well, perhaps your favorite punishment is dieting and restricting, or eating even more of the bad food and completely letting go of all your healthy habits. We might punish ourselves with a lot of self-judgment and self-attack. One of the most common punishments I see for eating food or food on our bad list is exercise. That's right, you know, we often exercise not because we love to move and feel fit, but so many people are exercising as a punishment for eating and having even an ounce of body fat. So interestingly enough, one of the lessons here is actually about letting go of this concept of good and bad foods. You know, oftentimes when we say to someone, don't eat that food, it's bad for you. What that person is really hearing is, you are a bad person if you eat that food. Can you see the nuanced difference here? So, yes, there are foods that can clearly enhance your health, we know this, and there are clearly foods that detract from your health. But the food itself is not morally good or morally bad. It's neutral. Is a knife good or bad? Well, it sort of depends how you use that knife. Same thing with food. Take away the moral value from food and simply look at it as, this food either enhances my health, as far as I can tell, or this food seems to detract from my health, as far as I can tell. And then you make your choices from there. When we remove the moral value of a food, judging it morally good or morally bad, heavenly or devilishly, we shortcut the punishment process for the times when, guess what, we're going to inevitably eat a food on our bad list. I hope you can see this distinction. Another lesson we can learn from our creation story is all about just really letting go of punishment in general. Punishing ourselves for eating something on our bad list has never helped any human being transform or heal or change their emotional eating. My friends, I've never met a single person who said to me, I spent as much energy as I can, as much time as I could, punishing myself for eating things I shouldn't be eating. I self-rejected and self-attacked for hours every day. I hated my body as much as I could possibly do. And one day I woke up and I was all better. I reached my ideal weight and was totally happy and I never emotionally ate ever again. Simply put, my friends, punishment and self-attack around food does not work. We're going to talk about this more in subsequent sessions. We're just creating a foundation right now, some concepts that we can use to build upon. So here's the thing. We often get confused about conditional versus unconditional love and acceptance. We often get confused about conditional versus unconditional love and acceptance. What does that mean? Well, conditional love and acceptance means that I love and accept myself, even though I'm not perfect, even though I ate something I wish I wouldn't have eaten, and I love and accept myself even though I am not exactly where I want to be when it comes to food or my body. That's unconditional love acceptance. Even though I'm not perfect, you know, I can still love and accept myself. Conditional love and acceptance means I will only love and accept myself if I weigh a certain amount. I will only love and accept myself if I eat the exact way that I think I should. I will only love and accept myself if this body fat is gone and my eating is perfect. Sounds a little strange, doesn't it? This is the way so many of us have been conditioned and taught to think. You didn't invent this way of thinking. Think of it. What would happen if your best friend said to you the same things you say to yourself? What if your best friend said, you know, I'm only going to love you once you lose weight and eat perfectly, and once you lose 5 pounds, 5 kilos, whatever it is? You'd be horrified if somebody that cares about you said that to you. Would you say to your tiny child or infant that you're not going to love them until they burn more body fat and burn more baby fat and until they have abs of steel and a chiseled butt? Of course not. That would be terrible parenting. And yet, this is how we so often talk to ourselves. Throughout this program, you're going to be learning practices to help you harness your mind, your inner dialogue. Practices that encourage and inspire you to love and accept yourself into growth and transformation, rather than punishing yourself into growth and transformation, which simply doesn't work. Now, think about that for a moment. We want to have the ideal body, and we want to stop emotionally eating so we can love ourselves more and enjoy life, right? That's the ultimate goal you're looking for, to feel and experience more love, more joy, more confidence, more goodies. But if you want to feel more self-love at the end of the day, if you want to feel better about yourself at the end of the day, how can a road that's filled with self-attack, negative self-talk, shame, and self-rejection possibly lead to a destination of self-love and joy? The journey absolutely informs the destination. It is time to walk a path where you are creating the results that you want with each step that you take. Only a path of love can bring you to a destination of love. I believe that deep down inside, each one of us knows this. And sometimes we just need a good reminder. You know, we're often living in the past or the future about our body. Meaning, you know, I'm wishing for a certain kind of body that I want, that I believe is going to make me happy. Or we're wishing to eat in a certain way that we believe will lead to freedom and happiness. Or we might simply be wishing for the body type or eating style that we had in the past that we look back and say, oh, well, that was my ideal body back then. So we dream about the body we want in the future. We dream about the one we had in the past. And the net result is that we're not in the present. We are not here. We are not in real time, which is now. One of the ways to help transform emotional eating is to actually get present with the body you have right now, to occupy the body you have right now. Let me say that another way. In our journey through life with a body, many of us disembody. In other words, we check out of the body. What does that mean? Well, we can walk around just living in our head. We live as if, you know, my body is just a life support system for my head. I've done this. So again, we've disembodied. We've stepped outside of our body, and we're simply not fully in it. We're not inhabiting it. And when this happens, it's much easier to emotionally eat. What's strange is that eating actually helps us get back into the body. Because eating is a very powerful bodily affair. It's a metabolic affair. It's a digestive affair. You're taking something that's not you from outside you, and you're consuming it, you're ingesting it, and the body has to do a lot. So eating puts us in our body. So emotional eating for many people is calling them to get back into their body in a more consistent way, in ways other than eating. So why would a human being disembody? Why would we do that? Well, we do that because oftentimes the body can be a painful place to live. You and I have experienced emotional hurts, abuses, traumas, and difficult to process life experiences. And when our hurts and abuses and traumas and difficult life experiences are too much to handle, we do the best we can to protect ourselves from hurt and pain. And one of the great strategies to protect ourselves from hurt and pain is to disembody. We choose to not live inside our body and fully feel our feelings. So we are here to learn how to be in a body, how to be eaters, and how to find happiness all at the same time. Our goal is more time spent in freedom with food and celebration of our body and in enjoying the life we've been giving and the life we're meant to live. So we previously talked about how our life is a journey, an epic story, how we each have our own unique journey with food and body. So part of what we're doing is we're learning to create a new story around food and body and to invent a happier journey and a happier ending. So with that in mind, I'd love to share with you just one example, one case story, a success story when it comes to emotional eating. So a woman I once worked with, I'm going to call her Francesca. She came to see me for her emotional eating. She was 36 years old, married, was planning on having kids in another year or so. Francesca was in a solid relationship. She worked from home and kind of person who had a very keen interest in nutrition and health. So Francesca's been emotionally eating since she was 14 years old. That's 22 years, maybe even earlier. And she was very frustrated about why she couldn't get her eating under control. She lived with a lot of guilt and shame and was secretly convinced that she was just a willpower failure. Additionally, Francesca had been dieting for about 20 years and she wanted to lose 15 to 20 pounds. She'd been told that she was chubby when she was very young, and she recalls that this was when her emotional eating first began. That's kind of typical. I've heard this story many times. So these days, her emotional eating would happen during work hours. She would snack throughout the workday out of boredom or anxiety, and then she would eat sweets or cookies after dinner until she felt full of cookies and sweets or full of guilt. She'd also emotionally eat if she would gain as little as a pound, and she weighed herself once or twice a day. And scales are very inaccurate. Your weight can go up or down depending on nothing. So Francesca wanted to feel more under control. She wanted to feel more confident about herself. She wanted to finally find freedom with food. She wanted the constant, just the negative conversation in her mind around food and her body to just stop. So I want to share with you some of the key highlights of how she and we found success. First, we worked on slowing down with food. Francesca categorized herself as a very fast eater. Fast, moderate, slow, she called herself a very fast eater. Now, not only does fast eating deregulate our appetite and drive the brain to signal that we're still hungry, but it also creates the physiologic stress response, sympathetic nervous system dominance, which causes decreased digestion and assimilation. It causes increased secretion of insulin and cortisol, and these two hormones, when they're secreted in excess, for most people, they're going to signal the body to store weight, store fat very vigorously, and not build muscle, your calorie-burning tissue, which is just the opposite of what we want when it comes to weight loss. Next, we worked on her weight loss dieting strategy, which was actually helping drive her emotional eating. Here's what I mean. Francesca was often, from a dieting perspective, she was skipping breakfast in an effort to eat less food and cut down on calories. She would also often eat just a very small lunch, i.e. a plain salad, sometimes no dressing. Now, that sounds good to the dieting mentality in us, but her body was energy deficient, meaning calorically deficient, and it was nutritionally deficient because of the way she was eating. And when we starve the body in the early part of the day, the brain takes notice that we're nutritionally deprived, and then eventually screams, hungry, and we're neurologically driven to eat. Francesca was wrongfully interpreting this nutritionally driven hunger as emotional eating. Because it feels like emotional eating in the moment. You're hungry, you're starving, because your brain is telling you you're starving, and it's telling you you must devour food. Okay, next we worked on her macronutrient balance, the approximate proportions of protein, carbohydrates, and fat in the diet. Simply put, Francesca was eating too low in fat and too low in protein. And when we're deficient in any of the macronutrients, the brain really isn't smart enough to alert us to that exact fact. It doesn't say, hey, you're not eating enough essential fatty acids. or hey, you're not eating enough healthy protein. The brain simply screams hungry. It turbocharges our appetite, and we're biologically driven to eat more because the wisdom of the body is trying to create balance and remedy your nutritionally compromised state. Once again, she was calling this emotional eating. And again, in the moment, it feels like emotional eating, but I think as you're beginning to see, it's so much more than that. It's a physiologic-driven eating that's connected to an eating pattern, either fast eating or macronutrient balance, that doesn't work for us. So with just a few simple dietary tweaks, I had her eating regular meals, no meal skipping. I had her on a better macronutrient balance, meaning more healthy fat and more healthy protein relative to what she had been doing, which was very little. Her emotional eating decreased by over half in less than 2 weeks. So in other words, instead of emotionally eating every day, twice per day, it was now down to about 3 times per week. Now, Francesca was shocked by this, and even though she was eating more, she was actually eating more food, she wasn't gaining any weight. That's because her metabolism could now readjust upwards because her body no longer thought it was starving. When the body thinks it's starving, metabolism adjusts downwards. Dieting mimics the starvation response. Your body thinks there's no food. Next, we worked on some of her toxic dietary beliefs. Now, toxic dietary beliefs, these are thoughts and beliefs that can be as damaging to our metabolism as any toxic food. Francesca believed, like many people, that food is my enemy. Now, that might sound harmless to you, but when we hold this toxic belief, we are in a constant day-in, day-out, lifelong battle with food and a battle with our appetite. And whenever the brain senses enemy, it goes into the physiologic fight or flight response, sympathetic nervous system dominance. I've already mentioned the downside of this. It causes appetite dysregulation, meaning you're going to just end up eating more. And it creates fat deposition and weight loss resistance, mostly via the hormones insulin and cortisol. So Francesca was actually creating the kind of brain state that drives a human being to seek food and the kind of metabolism that adjusts downwards because of self-chosen, unneeded stress. We also worked on, based on that, letting go of all the stresses in her life as best as we could that were optional, self-chosen. Example, Francesca believed she needed to have the perfect body. She believed she needed to have the perfect weight, and consequently, she also was a bit of a perfectionist. I have to have the perfect life, be the perfect person. Perfectionism is it's an unnecessary self-chosen stress, one that has unfortunately powerful physiologic consequences on our metabolism. The stress of perfectionism, because you can never achieve it, it's impossible. The stress of perfectionism will adjust metabolism downwards, deregulate our appetite, cause us to eat more, once again, just the opposite of what she was wanting. We can't sweep our mind under the rugs when it comes to our metabolism. We can't sweep our thoughts and beliefs away, thinking that they're not impacting us. So I asked her to let go of weighing herself every day. Talk about letting go of self-chosen stressors. Asked her to stop weighing herself every day and not give her power away to a tiny little machine, the scale, that is going to decide for her how she should feel. Because if she lost a pound that day, she's happy. If she gained a pound that day, she's miserable. Her up and down emotions each day around weighing herself was actually driving her emotional eating. Sometimes if she gained a pound, she would resist eating food because she gained a pound, but then all of a sudden later on in the day, she'd be so hungry that she found herself emotionally eating, binge eating, grabbing for food. Why? Because her body's nutritionally deprived. Sometimes if she lost a pound, she would reward herself by eating, and then she would find herself eating too much. So she was letting a machine deregulate her emotions. Next, we look at how she was exercising. I mentioned this a bit. Francesca was doing about 3 classes per week of high-intensity exercises that, bottom line, she didn't truly enjoy. I quickly surmised, and she agreed, that she was exercising out of punishment for eating and out of actually a disgust for what she perceived as body fat that she didn't want, that she hated. And I asked her to do any kind of movement that she truly enjoyed, regardless of how many calories she thought it would or wouldn't burn. By the way, she chose dance and yoga. I also asked her to defocus a bit on her eating and her weight and start to put some of that energy, because she was putting a lot of energy into food, body, and weight, start to put that energy into your life, your passions. We explored what she truly wanted in life and how she would ideally channel her precious time and energy if it was going into something more precious. She agreed that she wanted to spend time doing more reading around motherhood, preparing for childbirth and raising a child, and she wanted to spend more time while she could taking acting classes. That was something she truly enjoyed. After several more months, her emotional eating went down from two or three times per week to once or twice per month. And at this point, she felt more empowered, more alive, more free. She lost a dozen pounds, and she wasn't even trying. She wasn't dieting. She wasn't in dieting consciousness. For the first time in her adult life, she felt a sense of her own womanhood. She felt an acceptance of her body. She wasn't fighting food. She wasn't spending her days in constant food and weight worry. She was focused on the things that truly mattered most to her. This person, Francesca, did the work to transform her emotional eating. By the way, the strategies I used with Francesca, you're going to be learning about these in far more detail and more in this program. Just wanted to give you a taste. In fact, let's get you officially started on your emotional eating breakthrough journey. I have an exercise for you. It's instructive, it's powerful, it's for this week's session, and it's this. I'd like you to write down your food and body autobiography. So write down your food and body autobiography. So what does that mean? Your food and body autobiography is everything you can come up with around the journey you've been on when it comes to your relationship with food and your experience of bodily life. I'd like you to take your time and make this autobiography as extensive and detailed and juicy as you can. So I'd like you to start this autobiography with your earliest memories of food and your earliest memories of what it was like to be in your body that you were born into. And proceed to write about your journey with food and body throughout the years up until today. So what were some of your memorable experiences with food and dieting and weight and health and body image and your overall relationship with food? What did you absorb and learn from your parents, your friends, your loved ones? What did you absorb from movies, from reading, from media, from social media? I want you to include stories and memories of the happy times, the difficult times, the challenging times, the breakthrough times, and any important experiences that helped shape your relationship with food and body. What helped you along your journey with food and body? What got in your way? Can you recall what age you started emotional eating? What was going on at that time in your life? What were the challenges or upsets that may have been happening that caused you to turn to food? Were there any particular significant relationships that had an impact on you, positively or negative, when it comes to your experience of food and body? How did your experience of sex impact your relationship with food and body? And this is often a hidden contributor to our challenges with food. Many people have experienced sexual abuse or sexual, just simply confusion or uncertainty or discomfort. We may have sexual shame that we picked up along the way from family, from the world. We may have had difficult sexual relationships or breakthrough ones. And again, our relationship with sex oftentimes has an impact on our eating challenges. So I just want you to keep your antennas up for that. Now, you may need to complete your autobiography, your food and body autobiography, over the course of a week. Give yourself plenty of time and a number of sittings. Once you've completed this exercise, I'd love for you to notice just your overall experience of writing this autobiography. Your job here is not to fix anything. It's not to solve anything. You're gathering data. You're telling your story. And you're naturally seeing what arises for you from this exercise. So at the end, once it's complete, I'd love for you to ask yourself, did I learn anything new about myself? Did I have any insights? Did I have any aha moments? Did any feelings arise for me as I wrote this? Did I make any connections that I hadn't made before? And just ask yourself, what was the value for you in this exercise? I'd also like you to see if you can look at your entire journey with food and body as your beautiful, perhaps difficult, and unique story. Can you embrace and honor your journey? Can you bless your journey rather than curse it? Can you see how forces outside of you shaped your feelings, your thoughts, and your beliefs? Can you see how nothing is really your fault? And that at each phase of life, you were doing your best? Can you find a little bit of love or like for yourself in the challenges that you faced? Can you forgive yourself? Can you forgive any of the people in your life who have hurt you when it comes to relationship with food and body? By the way, I should just mention this exercise and the exercises for all other weeks, they're included in written form in your notes. So these same instructions that I just gave you verbally, you can see in written form. So you don't have to worry about trying to remember it. Let's begin to wrap up for this week. And I first want to introduce one more, what I believe, very important concept when it comes to emotional eating. I want to give you a sneak preview of how effective and powerful this program will be for you as you follow it and do the work. Now, there's many different reasons why human beings overeat, and there are many approaches that we'll be using to help you have a breakthrough with emotional eating. Here's one common experience of emotional eating that people have. So many people say, I know what I want to eat. I know what I'm supposed to do. I just don't do it. I know how I'm supposed to behave. I know I should eat this and I shouldn't eat that. It seems like I sabotage myself. I just can't follow my own rules and principles. We know very well that we don't wish to emotionally eat, and yet we do it. Why? What's going on here? This is a big question for so many people. Why can't I do the thing that I say I want to do? I'm going to answer that question for you. I'm going to give you the simple answer to that question, because technically it's very simple. Here it is. The reason why you don't always do what you say you want to do is because we have different archetypes or personas or personalities within us. I'm using those terms interchangeably. Again, we have different archetypes or personas or voices or personalities within us. In other words, you and I are not just one person, you're more like a crowd of people. For example, if you're a woman, you have the daughter in you because you're a daughter. You have your inner child, you have your inner adult. If you're a mother, you have the mother archetype within you. If you have a best friend, you have the best friend archetype. You might have the persona of the healer archetype. Some are the wounded healer archetype. You may have the warrioress in you. You might have the nature girl in you, the athlete in you, the intellectual in you. You might have the judge in you, the critic in you, the perfectionist in you. You might have the nerd in you. You might have the good girl in you, the bad girl in you, the witch, the bitch. You might have the explorer in you, the businesswoman in you, the lover in you, so many more. Again, these are simply different personas, different voices. We classically call them archetype, that when taken in total, they essentially comprise our personality. So here's why this is important. In general, whenever we eat, one of these voices is sitting at the head of the table, so to speak. In other words, when you're being a mother, your mother archetype is what's present, hopefully, and making the decisions. When you're with your best friend personality, persona, your best friend voice is doing all the talking. When we emotionally eat, a different persona automatically and unconsciously becomes the decision maker. I want to say that again. When we emotionally eat, a different voice pops into your head. A different persona or archetype takes the seat at the head of the table and becomes the decision maker. What I've noticed is that for a majority of people, when we emotionally eat, the adult in us steps aside, meaning the wise decision maker within us checks out. And who checks in? The child in us, the teenager in us, or the rebel in us takes over and begins to make our choices around food. Those are some of the key and most common voices or archetypes that drive our emotional eating. This is so important. Let me state this in another way. Different terms. We often revert to a certain age when we emotionally eat. You might become a 5-year-old or a 15-year-old. You might do one particular age consistently when you emotionally eat. You might switch to a few of them. We pitch our tent at a certain age because that's where some of our difficulties may have originally began. So when you say to yourself, I know what to eat, I know what to do, I just don't do it, I sabotage myself. Well, that's kind of what's going on. You're not really sabotaging yourself. You know what you want to do, but you, the adult, is saying that. The adult in you is saying, I know what I'm supposed to do, I just don't do it. Correct. Because when it comes to the actual moment of decision making, the adult in you checks out. The adult in you, he or she, is no longer in charge. A different persona is sitting at the head of the table. A different persona is driving the car, and we don't even realize it because it's automatic and it's unconscious. We revert to a younger age. We revert to a part of ourselves that wants immediate gratification and does not care about any future consequences. You following me? So here's a question for you. In fact, love for you to journal about this. What archetype or persona or voice, remember those are all interchangeable terms, what archetype or persona or voice is taking over when I emotionally eat? So just imagine that there's a younger version of you that's showing up and making the decisions. I want you to describe this voice or this personality or this person. How old is he or she? Is it a child? Is it a teenager? Is it the rebel in me? Sometimes the rebel in me. Nobody tells me what to do. Not even me. I'm going to do whatever I want to do. I'm not listening to anybody. A lot of us have that voice in us. And it's a good voice. It's just it can work against us. There might be a different voice in you that you notice or discover is doing the emotional eating. So describe the personality of this particular voice. And if you can, just pick an age, identify that age. Again, what was going on at this age in your life? What challenges were you experiencing? So if the 12-year-old takes over when you emotionally eat, what was happening when you were 12 years old? What was going on in your family? What was going on in school? What was going on in your social life with friends? How was your relationship with food and your body at that point? What were the difficult to process experiences that were happening perhaps in your life at this age? Now, please know that there are no right or wrong answers. You're not trying to get this right. You're exploring. You're checking things out. Now, once you've journaled about this voice or archetype that may be taking over when you emotionally eat, I'd love for you to ask yourself, what does this voice or part of me truly need? Is this teenager or child in me? Is this 10-year-old in me? Is this voice looking for more comfort, for more warmth, for more assurance, for more listening, for more understanding, for good parenting, for more love? If it's the rebel in you, is the rebel in me just needing a good place, a better place to put its rebellious energy other than rebelling against my own good wishes to eat the food that the adult in me wants to eat? So your task, your ultimate task as someone who emotionally eats, who it's problematic for, is to eventually choose the persona within you that makes the decisions around food. This means that you gradually begin to notice, you consciously notice the younger voice in you that takes over automatically and is making the decision to emotionally eat. And in that moment, you learn. You learn how to call forth the adult in you, the king in you, the queen in you, the royalty in you, the wise woman, the wise man in you. You invoke the voice that you want to have in making the decisions and calling the shots with food. So this is one important strategy you'll be learning in this program. We're going to revisit this. So as you write your food and body autobiography, keep this in mind. Notice the age or ages or times in life when emotional eating became more of a strategy for you, when it began to really lock itself in. And this is going to give you some clear clues as to who is actually eating when you emotionally eat. Because in essence, that's the question we're asking. When I emotionally eat, who's eating? Promise you it's not the adult in you. Promise you it's not the wise person in you. Promise you it's not the king or queen in you. It's, generally speaking, some version of a child or a teenager or a rebel in you. And again, this answers the question of why you would choose to do something, emotionally eating, that you say you don't want to do. Even if somebody just says, I really shouldn't eat that sugar. It's not good for me. I shouldn't eat the sugar. It's not good for me. I really shouldn't eat it. And all of a sudden, they find themselves eating the sugar. Now, it's not the adult in you that made that decision. It's the kid in you that made the decision. It's the teenager in you that made the decision. It's the pleasure junkie in you that made the decision. It's the rebel in you that made that decision. It's some other voice that had more power in that moment. So we're simply using the beautiful study of the mind of psychology, the study of archetypes, to help understand ourselves better so we can reclaim our power. You're in this program because you're ready for a transformation. You're ready for a breakthrough, which means a part of you knows that it's time to do some good work, the real work on yourself. I applaud you for putting your time, energy, and money into your own betterment, your own personal transformation. The best investment you can make is in yourself, and you're doing it. And more important now, do the homework. Be curious. Be a passionate scientist of your own journey. And see what connections you make, see what insights you have, see what you discover. I'm also going to suggest that you keep a separate journal or document where you can just write down and catalog some of your insights, your thoughts, your epiphanies, your wonderings, and just some key lessons that you learn for each week. Be a good student of your own life, because that's how your emotional eating is going to transform. That's how you're going to have a breakthrough. You're not going to have a breakthrough by the old ways. The old ways are punishing yourself. The old ways are self-attacking. The old ways are negative self-talk. The old ways are thinking that you're a willpower weakling. Now all of a sudden you're starting to understand, oh, I'm not a willpower weakling. There's another archetype or voice takes over, because we're not just this one personality. We're a beautiful crowd of different personalities, of different voices, of different archetypes that make us rich, fascinating, interesting human beings. So you are learning how to transform your emotional eating by diving into your own story, by diving into your own journey, because that's where the gold is. You don't have to punish yourself anymore. This is all about loving yourself or liking yourself into your breakthrough, into your healing. So again, keep that separate journal where you can catalog insights, thoughts, epiphanies, and it's just a great way to chart your progress and make this journey a happy and inspiring one. So my friends, this concludes session number one of the Emotional Eating Breakthrough. So many good things to consider here. I'll see you in the next session. ¶¶